Hi, everyone, and welcome to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 podcast, NPR style. I'm Jeremy Breisel. My guest today, Corey Schwartz. Corey, you're a bit of a fantasy baseball aficionado.
A little bit, JB, a little bit.
All right, now let's get back to the 411 style, because that would be a long, whispery hour. Hi, everybody, it's JB back in your ear holes. I hope you can hold on. There's a ton of information we have to get to. Corey, are you prepared to bring the knowledge thunder?
I'm going to bring it. August dog days of summer, rapid fire style.
That's right. It's the rolling, thunderous, cumulonimbus clouds of knowledge on the way. It starts with cargo, 26 home runs, 21 stolen bases, but now on the DL, so he'll be earning zero stats.
Wow. I mean, what a tough time of year to lose a top five player. You know, 302, 26 homers, 21 steals, as you said. He's tried to play through this sprained middle finger. He said, there's no reason to go on the DL. I can't make it worse. But he managed only 15 at-bats in six games over the last 2 weeks, and finally it was too much. So he goes on the DL. And look, you always think about hand, wrist, middle finger, pinky finger, hook of the hammock, all these tiny little gentle things that you think aren't going to hurt anything. And we've seen some good seasons undone by that stuff. So even if this is a short-term DL stint, this has the potential to really throw a wrench in the remainder of his season. And the problem is, this time of year, you can't just go out on the waiver wire and find high-quality replacements. You've got to just sort of scrape around. Charlie Blackman is a guy who will take a lot of at-bats in the Rockies outfield. He's got a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. He might be worth a pickup, especially if you're in daily leagues and you can spot him when they're at home. But this is the time of year where you just got to go out and find the best available on the waiver wire, because, I mean, you can't replace Carlos Gonzalez ever.
Right.
But you'd rather have this injury in April when you've got a year to rebound from it. In August, this is brutal timing.
Yeah, bad news for counting stats. Go figure out which one you need the most and try to get that off the waiver wire. Speaking of, oh, great DL time for players that I really need right now. This one's going to be longer. Strained hamstring. David Wright, 3 to 5 weeks. Wilmer Flores comes up to AAA to replace him, but comes up from AAA. Again, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, this is a brutal loss, too. You know, I have David Wright in three leagues, so I'm scrambling to replace him. You know, the good thing about this case is that at least the in-house replacement, Wilmer Flores, is worth a look. You know, the kind of jury is out on him as a prospect. Some people think he's a Miguel Cabrera-type prospect who will develop power as he ages and matures. Some people think his plate discipline is a little shaky. He was putting up big numbers at AAA, 321, 15 homers, 86 RBIs. But Reno is one of the best hitters environments in the PCL, so you have to take that with a grain of salt. And he hadn't really shown a ton of power before that. So he's the natural guy to pick up. But whether he's a 300 hitter with power or a 275 hitter with middling power, you know, it's going to take a long time to find out. And without David Wright, the Mets offense, look, we've been picking on them in pitcher ditch. You just put a big, big red target right on them right now.
Yeah, they are not a team that is feared offensively. Meanwhile, also joining him on the DL, this is a really nice all-star team he got going on the DL, by the way. Ricky Weeks, 15-day, strained left hammy. Scooter! Returns from AAA to replace him.
Scooter Gennett, I love that name. You know, this is less of a painful thing because if your team was doing well, it was probably in spite of Ricky Weeks.
Yeah.
And if your team was doing badly, you're probably worrying about, you know, what round you're going to take your running back, you know, in your NFL draft. The Brewers will get Aramis Ramirez back pretty soon, maybe this weekend, maybe early next week. So they'll go from a struggling bat to a struggling bat. Gennett is an interesting guy. He can hit for a little bit of average. You know, in the minors, he looked like an 8 to 10 homer, 15 steal kind of guy. The guy I would probably pick up, though, is Jeff Bianchi. He strikes out a lot. He's not going to hit for good average. He was a 286 hitter in the minor league, so doesn't have Gannett's upside in that respect, but a little bit more power and might even be, I wouldn't say an impact player in steals, but a guy who can give you a meaningful number of steals over the next couple of weeks. So that's if you have to take the in-house replacement. Again, finding middle infielders in the middle of August is not where you want to be on the waiver wire, but Bianchi is at least a guy you can plug in for a week or two or for a couple of days in a daily league until a better option comes along, because I think those steals might be useful at this time of year.
Good luck with all of that. Bobby Parnell, hey, now you got a closer on the DL to help out the offensive guys. LaTroy earns saves on Tuesday and Thursday. Is he the solution, Corey Schwartz?
Well, it looked like for now. You know, Parnell's been struggling with that neck problem. He thinks he'll be back this year, but I think he just had a cortisone shot, so that's going to be a little bit of a while. I think a lot of people, myself included, thought that David Ardsma would get the first shot at closing with Parnell out, and he actually did get a save chance on Sunday, but blew it, and that sent that game into extra innings. Hawkins has had a terrific year. You know, he's 40 years old. He's on his 10th team.
Yep.
you know, he's kind of a, you know, become one of those sort of interchangeable middle setup relievers now that bounces from team to team to team. But 4-1 strikeout to walk rate this year, a 2.86 ERA. He's got some closing experience, just like Arzma does. You know, he's an interesting case. He's one of those guys that was a great setup reliever, but seemed to struggle as a closer, yep. and then maybe lent some, you know, some evidence, I won't say proof, to the notion that you have to have something special up here to be a closer versus a setup guy.
We're not on video,
but at this point, well, I tapped the old noggin.
There you go.
Just tapped for the cement block.
For the viewers
I got up here.
Listening at home.
But at the end of the day, the thing that matters is results. 37 strikeouts, only 9 walks, and 15 and a third innings. Good pitcher's park. You know, look, closers don't grow on trees. There's only 30 of them at any given time. And when one changes and the obvious in-house replacement is at least a useful reliever, you spend that remaining free agent budget. Yeah. So I lost Jose Veras in my NFBC league as my third closer.
Uh-huh.
Gambled on Jose Cisnero. That didn't work out. We'll get back to that. I'm spending big on Hawkins this week.
I mean,
just because he's there. And you can't say, look, if you're sitting there in the middle of September with 25% of your FAB money left, you did it wrong.
Right.
You got to spend that money. And now this might be your last good chance.
It doesn't go to next year.
Right. You know, the only thing you could see happening right now, barring an injury, is probably Kevin Gregg going somewhere on a waiver claim.
Yep.
And then maybe, you know, Pedro Strop or Blake Parker becomes the closer with the Cubs. But we've got to wait and see. You know, Hawkins is the guy right now.
Hawkins is the guy right now. Now, that leads us directly into Josh Fields. Got saved Monday, blows up on Wednesday. So do you look at the Astros? If you look at the Astros, who do you go get?
Well, you know, again, the Astros have the fewest wins in the major leagues. I thought Cisnero would get the first shot, but he turned into a pumpkin at the wrong time, and he's been sent down. You know, Fields had big strikeout numbers in the minor leagues. He's, you know, a Rule 5 guy. 23 strikeouts in 21 innings in limited time with the Astros, but 10 walks allowed and 6 homers in 21 and a third innings. So unless you're in a super deep or NL-only keeper league and you are desperate for saves, you might want to stay away from this one. You know, maybe Josh Zied or Chien Lo, the rookie who just, you know, two guys who got called up after the trade deadline, maybe one of them will get a look. It's tough to say. I don't want to out Kevin Goldstein, but everybody knows Kevin Goldstein and everybody knows that we're friendly. So I texted him that first night and I said, all right, who's the closer?
Uh-huh.
And at that point, Lowe, in his second major league game, was in a save situation. He says, well, let's see how Lowe does here. So I think, look, and I, you know, it's not fair for me to be talking about Kevin this way because I try to not bug my friends for fantasy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what he was saying, and I think we can rightfully take away, is that they're last in the major leagues in wins.
Yes.
What does it matter who their closer is? They're going to audition a bunch of relievers, and maybe it's Fields today, maybe it's someone else tomorrow.
They're not probably going to rattle off 15 saves before the end of the season.
Probably not.
All right, speaking of wins, a lot of times the starters get them, but we know that's sort of chasing wins.
Nice segue.
Shelby Miller throws only two before he gets a Carl Crawford liner gift. Carlos Martinez, well, the Dodgers said, hey, how you doing? Nice to see you. Boom. Makawaka. We'll start. That sounds really good on radio, by the way. Makawaka. starts on Saturday. What are your thoughts on all those guys?
All right, so the first news is Shelby Miller thinks he'll be okay for his next start. He only threw two pitches. And if he's not injured, he's just got the contusion, this might end up being a little bit of a silver lining because it helps them sort of, you know, protect their innings count on him, because you have to worry about, you know, how many innings he was going to be able to throw this year. So Jake Westbrook came in and sort of pitched emergency relief. That required them to bring up Martinez to pitch yesterday, and that moves up to Mike Wach on Saturday. So that's how we got here. Martinez had made 10 relief appearances this year after some unbelievable numbers in the minors, a 1.87 ERA in 13 starts. He's their number 3 or number 4 prospect, depending on who you like. And in his first start last night, this guy was mucho impressive. Mm-hmm. Touched 100 miles an hour, had incredible movement on his sinking fastball. But because he hasn't started in a while, maybe not stretched out or maybe the second time through, the Dodgers finally got to him. So he's a great prospect. We'll have to see what their long-term plans are for him. But he's one of those guys that you would like to stash. You know, if he gets called up, and even if he's only up for a little while, you try and grab him and stash him in your keeper league because he's got a big arm. Mike Wacha, we saw earlier in the season, made 3 fill-in starts, handled himself very well. 14 strikeouts, only 4 walks and 17 and two-thirds. 265 and 9 starts in AAA this year. Another big, big-time prospect. Big fastball, big breaking ball. So we'll have to see. After Martinez on Thursday, Wacha on Saturday, we'll have to see what the rotation shakes out like next week. But both of these guys are very good long-term plays, and in favorable matchups, you might still want to keep an eye on them for this year as well.
There you go. The Cardinals just keep doing what they do. Danny Salazar K's, 10 Tigres in 7 2/3 innings pitched on Wednesday in just his second MLB start. Is he a strikeout machine?
Yeah, Corey, I mean, Schwartz, like Martinez and Waka, a great example of a guy getting an opportunity because of an injury. Corey Kluber is having a nice breakout year. He's out 4 to 6 weeks with a sprained right middle finger. And just as an aside, in all of their press releases and medical updates that the Indians were sending out, they were calling it a sprained long finger, which I thought was really funny. Maybe the connotations of middle finger were a little bit too much for them to take.
Interesting.
I got a big kick out. So then I'm literally standing there like, you know, is this finger really longer? Like,
is it just
if you sort of even it out
higher
from the joint, like, is it really that much longer? But it really is. So anyway.
Indeed it is.
Corey Kluber out 4 to 6 weeks with the sprained long finger. Danny Salazar comes up. I mean, like Martinez, this guy can touch 100, sits at 94 to 98. His changeup and slider kind of run together sometimes, but they're two distinct pitches, but great movement. And, you know, in his, I think part of the reason we don't know a ton about him as a prospect, or maybe he wasn't on the radar a lot more, is that his early minor league career was a little bit spotty. It's only since the start of last year that he's really sort of come together in the minor leagues. Since the start of last year, 2012, 180 minor league innings, 205 strikeouts, only 51 walks.
Yeah.
That's from A-ball, AA, and then on to AAA this year. So, and he's been very, very impressive. And the thing I like, it's not like he struck out 10 against the Astros, who are going to, you know, set a major league record for strikeouts, or, you know, a weak offense like the Padres or the Giants.
Just a lot of days off for guys, yeah.
Detroit is a big-time offense. He struck out Miguel Cabrera, best hitter in baseball, three times, and Cabrera finally got to him the fourth time up. That's going to happen. But that's very, very encouraging. So we look ahead to next week, and I don't want to scoop the two-star pitchers, but Minnesota and Oakland, one cupcake matchup in there, and then Oakland's a tough offense, but a good pitcher's park. Yeah. This guy is very much on the radar right now and a guy you want to grab. He's got a chance to cement himself in that rotation with Kluber out.
And that's the kind of stuff the end of the season really matters. And this is the kind of stuff that has you screaming at the TV or the MLB.com at-bat app or game day, whatever it is that you're consuming baseball on through MLB.com. As a fantasy baseball owner, these are the kind of players that give you the twitches and the hiccups.
Agita?
The agita.
Soros.
It actually gives you plantar fasciitis. That's how bad it bothers you. Tim Lincecum, one hit in 8 innings pitched against the Brewers, which puts him at 339 and 82 strikeouts in his last 77 innings pitched over his last 12 starts. That's not the guy that started the season. So when you gave up and surrendered, like, I can't do it anymore, and somebody went, I'll take a flyer, and has now just gone right past you in all the pitching stats, and it's all because Tim Lincecum, who you drafted because he was so good in October. Corey Schwartz, help out those both sides of that argument.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the guy that we saw 2 or 3 years ago. I think we have to accept that. He doesn't have that, you know, that incredible velocity. But he's really, you know, we talk a lot about velocity, that it's not the most important thing for pitchers, but changes in velocity are important.
Significant,
because
yes,
it changes how the batters time them. It changes the differential in their pitches. It changes how the pitcher tries to attack hitters. Lincecum would throw 93 or 94, sometimes faster at his peak. Now he's like a guy who sits around 90. He doesn't have that big back-breaking velocity. But if you look at his pitches, his pitch repertoire, and I see the pitch FX data every day, he's doing a lot more with the fastball. It used to be a four-seamer and a sinker. He's throwing a lot more cut fastballs. His changeup and slider, throwing those a lot more. Really trying to mix up the hitter. To use a really trite term, he's going from a hard thrower to a pitcher.
Yep.
He's trying to transition into becoming a pitcher. And I could see him having a nice little, I don't want to say late career because he's still very young.
Yeah.
But I think he can have a little renaissance in the next year or two as he adjusts to learning how to pitch with this different stuff that he has. Think about Pedro Martinez. Late in his career, was still very, very effective, throwing 87, 88, because he could throw a lot of different pitches and put them all in a teacup. So I think Lincecum could be one of those guys if he continues to adjust. Next week, will be a good test. At Washington, kind of up and down offensively, and then Boston, big-time offense. You know, the way he's been pitching over the last 10, 12 starts, you've got to have a little bit more confidence in those than you might have 5 or 6 starts ago when we weren't sure if this was really something big taking hold.
And that's,
you know, the last thought to that, JB, and I'm sorry to interrupt you because I don't want to, you know,
whatever,
steal your thunder, too.
I've got no thunder.
Lightning?
I'm the lightning.
Low pressure system? You know, this is the time.
I'm the rainbow at the end of the story.
Double rainbow.
Double rainbow, man.
This is the time of year in fantasy where you worry less and less about names
yes.
and reputations and all that stuff, and you just look at results, trends, categories, matchups.
Yep.
Lincecum may have burned you, but the way he's pitched the last 10 to 12 starts, the role he's on, you have to just sort of look at it and say, all right, are these matchups favorable or not? Can I afford to take a chance? And do I go for a guy like this? So a lot of the guys we're talking about, honestly, look, before Danny Salazar made his major league debut last month, I had truly never heard of the guy.
Right.
Brad Miller got called up by the Mariners. I was like, Brad Miller, let me go look it up and see who he
Brad
is.
Brad Miller.
You got to forget about the names. This isn't draft day. This is you know, the pennant race. This is
the surge, right. Yeah.
Especially in head-to-head leagues where you know you're going to be done in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
This is where you're just looking about performance, trends, categories, and not really worrying as much about the names.
That's certainly one of the more dramatic stories of the season will be his, both in fantasy and real baseball. Another name, which, you know, yielded success early, but now is starting to bite you. Now, what to do? Jeff Smarja, 9 runs, 11 hits, 3 1/3. ERA balloons to 4.23. Exactly one of those points of, all right, what do I do now, Corey?
Yeah.
Snake bit.
Yeah, the Phillies really roughed him up. And, you know, Smarja came out of the gates around the All-Star break, had a little bit of a slump, pitched well his last 4 times out. But now when you add it up with this beating, his ERA is at 6.75 since July 1st, 22 walks in 40 innings. Now, the good news is 38 strikeouts in 40 innings. That's down from where he was, but those are still dominant strikeout numbers. The problem we're seeing with Smarja, I don't know if it's fatigue, if it's a mechanical problem. I don't have that kind of trained eye. But when you see pitchers start to give up a lot of walks, they compensate for that by throwing the ball down the middle. Smarja and Dale Swaim yesterday said he was wild in the zone, throwing a lot of fastballs down the middle. Didn't have his split finger working. Got 0 swings and misses in all of that stuff against the Phillies yesterday. And look, this is an offense without Ryan Howard, with Jimmy Rollins having a poor year.
Yep.
You know, this is not the vaunted Phillies offense of 3-4 years ago. So I'm not saying cut Smarja, but again, this time of year, depending on the matchups and the trends, he's definitely fallen down now into that pitcher ditch category because you really can't take chances. I mean, unless you're locked in ratios and you are desperately chasing wins and strikeouts, you can't risk these kind of blowups at this time of year.
That'll cost you.
You don't have time to bounce back from them.
King Leonidas steals 3 bases in back-to-back games on Wednesday and Thursday. He's a speed machine as he waits for all of the Persian army to descend upon him in the 300. That's not right.
I don't know what you were
talking. That didn't sound right.
You lost me there for a second. All right, Leonis Martin, the Rangers.
Sparta.
So two thoughts to this. Number one, with Nelson Cruz out, are they changing their offensive strategy? Martin and Elvis Andrus absolutely ran wild against the Angels.
Yes.
Or was that just them picking on Iannetta and Conger and, you know, guys like Tommy Hansen who have slow releases? But Martin seems to be entrenched in that leadoff spot now with Kinsler dropping into the 3 spot. He's stolen the minors, 29 stolen bases in less than a full season of minor league work, but 20 times caught stealing. So you're like, all right, what's this guy going to do? In the majors, 26 steals, but only 5 caught. So whether it's good coaching, fast learning curve, whatever it may be, he's been very, very effective. And keep this in mind, all 26 steals that he has this year have occurred since May 15th. He's 4th in the majors in steals in that time, behind Ellsbury, Everett Cabrera, and of course, I'm forgetting, and Rajai Davis is the 3rd. Now, Davis is going to be playing a lot now with Melky Cabrera back on the DL, but Cabrera, as we know, is out for the season. So there's a very easy argument to make that he's one of the top 3 stolen base guys in the majors from now till the end of the season. The one concern you have to have about him still, 804 OPS versus righties, 521 against lefties. So with Cruz out, will they mix and match more? Will that cost him at bats, or will they just pencil him in there? We'll have to see. But for stolen base impact, he is right there on that short list for the rest of the season.
There you go. Counting stats, you only accrue them one way. Cody Ash, 3-for-5, first Major League Baseball home run. Major League Baseball home run on Thursday. Cody!
Yeah.
Cody!
Took a little while for him to find his footing, but, you know, single, double, and a homer, that's a big game. Just a triple short of the cycle, as we like
so
to say.
Close.
He was viewed as sort of a good to pretty good prospect, not a great prospect. Maybe a little bit disappointing earlier in his minor league career, but this year in AAA, 295, 15 homers, 11 steals, and 104 games. So that's a nice balanced offensive package. He's going to play a lot, but like Martin, he doesn't hit lefties. At AAA, 901 OPS versus righties, 674 against lefties.
Mm-hmm.
Hit for a little bit of average, but no power at all. So this is a great guy to keep an eye on, especially in daily leagues. If they're against a righty, you know he's going to be in the lineup. He's going to play third most of the time, but they said they might try him out in the outfield. That gives him a little bit of position flexibility. And, you know, the Phillies are 10 games under 500. I think they've thrown in the towel on competing this season.
Yep.
This is the kind of guy they need to take a good long look at. And if they trade Mike Young, a post-waiver deadline deal, you've got to figure Ash will be in there even against lefties. So, you know, we talked about Cargo and Wright and Weeks, how you replace those guys. Look to teams that are struggling.
Yes.
They've got to give these young guys playing time and figure out what they have for next year. I have David Wright in NFBC and a couple other leagues. I picked up Matt Dominguez for the week because the Astros were at home, and Dominguez has hit pretty well at home. Naturally, he's 0 for 10 so far.
Naturally.
I'm going to try and pick up Ash next week because even with the platoon, I think he's probably a little bit more well-rounded player than Dominguez.
There you go, a little PT will matter. Quick hits time. Away we go before we bring in our good guest, our good friend, Steve Gardner, USA. Chris Archer, what's the update? 1 2/3 innings pitch, but soreness, do we panic, Corey?
It's not considered serious.
Yay.
As of right now. He's expected to make his next start, but keep an eye on it.
All right, but not exactly the same good news for Tyler Chatwood.
Tyler Chatwood and Logan Forsythe have a tee-tong tomorrow morning at Winged Foot.
They've got time to play golf because your right elbow is not included. Chatwood on the DL.
Right elbow inflammation. He will go into MRI. There is a chance, not a doctor and I don't play one on TV, there's a chance this could be the end of his season, which is disappointing because he was finally getting noticed for the breakthrough he was having this year. So in keeper leagues, this might want to be a guy, if you're rebuilding, that you go out and try and get on the cheap. Maybe you got a little nice little rotation.
That's right. When he slides into the DL, maybe you slide him under your keeper league. Nicely done, Corey Schwartz. That's how you win year after year, right? You're winning this year, right?
I am in second place in my NFBC league.
Excellent.
But that's despite a raft of injuries in my starting pitching staff. But good news on that front. Continue on with the quick hits.
Marco Estrada allows one hit, six strikeouts, and five shutout innings versus the Brewers on Wednesday.
He was expected to make a rehab start, so I didn't have him in my lineup. That stings. Instead, their rotation's banged up, so he comes back only on a 75-pitch pitch count, throws 74 pitches and dominates. But his next three starts are Texas, Cincinnati, and Cincinnati. So it's nice to have him back, but he's got a little bit of a gauntlet to get.
You really would have liked that start.
I was like, and because he was on the DL, I picked up Randall Delgado, who was supposed to face the Mets. But they pushed up Delgado, and he got the Rays instead and got roughed up by the Rays. So that one cut both ways.
That hurts. That stings.
That's why I hate weekly leagues.
That's why you have to call the managers ahead of time and say, this is what I need out of you guys.
Yeah, keep him up against the Mets.
Jonathan Neese is expected to return from the DL on Sunday against the Diamondbacks. What do you want? Would you throw him in there? Throw him out there? How about it?
I'd probably wait and see on that one. But unlike Estrada, I think Neese gets the Pirates back-to-back starts with his next two starts after Arizona. By the way, yes, I have Marco Estrada and Jonathan Neese on my NFBC pitching staff. Mm-hmm. I also had Brandon McCarthy. So those were my number two, number three, and number five starters this year.
Wow.
Lost them all within a couple weeks of each other, got them all back within 8 days of each other.
That's a well-played strategy as we...
draft guys who will get injured at the same time but come back
at the
same time.
And then you can just do all your solutions in clumps of people. You don't have to think over a period of time. You just want to
get it all done at
once.
It has not been fun piecing together a starting rotation with 3/5 of them injured.
Second in NFBC. Where else are you, and what about the remainder of your leagues?
4-1-1 league, I'm buried. Tout Wars, I'm buried, unfortunately. It's just bad starting pitching year, too much Matt Kemp. But NFBC is the one that's going to bring me home.
I know we'll do more later in the year, but what was the draft pick that burned you the most this year?
In Tout Wars?
Yeah.
Matt Kemp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when your most expensive player has the Matt Kemp season that Matt Kemp is having right now, you can just sort of say, well, so much for my title defense. Flags fly forever.
Flags fly forever. That's our updates. That's our news and notes. Let's welcome in our esteemed colleague and friend and guest, Steve Gardner of USA Today. Steve, how you doing?
Doing great, Jeremy. How are you and Corey?
I'm doing okay. I mean, I have to work with Corey, so I'm doing fantastic.
Wow.
I'm doing fantastic.
Is it really that? Oh, okay.
It's a bonus thing. Yeah, listen, Corey. Listen.
So, Steve, I was thinking about this, and thank you for joining us today. I was thinking about it. You're kind of the Forrest Gump of fantasy baseball.
Whoa.
No, and I mean that as a compliment.
Oh, okay.
You know, Forrest Gump was the guy who was at the intersection of everything in history.
Oh, yes.
You know, you're the commissioner of labor right now. You're a defending Tout Wars champion. You work at USA Today, which is, you know, one of the media outlets that I think is most responsible for the growth of fantasy baseball. I mean, I'm one of those guys that did the stats for my league off the Monday and Tuesday USA Today stats section.
Well said.
I mean, you know, you've kind of been there for a lot of these big things. I mean, had you ever thought of it that way?
Oh, well, I feel very fortunate, you know, just like Forrest. It's being at the right place at the right time, I suppose. But had a lot of help, obviously, in John Hunt, who's just inducted into the Fantasy Sports Trade Association Hall of Fame, blazed the trail at USA Today as their really the first national fantasy baseball columnist. So if I can just, you know, keep the ship floating while I'm here, I'm happy about that.
And like Forrest, you're so humble, too. No, it's like, you know, you compare someone to Forrest Gump, they naturally think of, you know, think of it as like you're calling him slow or whatever, but I meant it like as a good thing.
In the more pop culture, at the crossroads
of
everything.
At the crossroads of history.
Talking to presidents, hanging out, running the country. Have you found that in the course of your career then, Steve, it has given you much success in all of your leagues because you've been at such the front edge of things, at the threshold of success?
I think you guys probably experienced this as well. When you are in the spotlight and your opinions are out there and you give them and everybody can see them and read them, it's a lot harder to get those sleeper guys that you really, really like because everybody knows who you do like and who you don't like, and they kind of use that against you. I especially see that in my home leagues where, I don't know, it seems like everybody's always ganging up on me, which is no fun at all. But that's what we do. We put ourselves out there, and for better or for worse, we live with what our opinions are that we make public.
Well, I guess if you got a target on your back, it's a little bit of a compliment, right? You know, people know you're there.
Certainly. And, you know, if you can maybe win a league, an experts league, a Tout Wars or a Labor or something like that, that can only help. And so was able to do one of each of those in the last couple of years.
Yeah, Steve trounced my last year in NL Tout Wars 2011. Uh-huh. Steve ran roughshod over the league that year. Yeah. It was ugly. I mean, for everybody
else. It was a
else.
Display.
Yeah, it was
a display of prowess. Steve, how did you get into such a wild business at the time that you started getting into it? It wasn't because there was no, as we've talked many times, there was no industry to get into. There was no, I'm going to go to media studies. I'm going to focus on sports. And then inside of sports, I'm going to focus on fantasy sports. And most specifically, I'm going to focus on baseball fantasy leagues.
Yeah. You were a radio guy, if I'm correct, right, Steve?
Exactly. That's what I went to school for. I thought I was going to be a play-by-play guy for, you know, Major League Baseball or NFL or college basketball. Those were the ones that I really got into. But as it turned out, was in radio for a while, did, you know, your news updates, and went to a lot of city council and government meetings and covered politics in addition to being able to, you know, do some of the fun stuff, uh-huh. The candy store dish kind of things with play-by-play high school games on the weekend. So that's where I was in my career, and it ended up that I went to a friend of mine that I used to work with, worked at this new little startup thing that they were doing at USA Today, which was kind of the precursor of the online. It was a news on the radio on the telephone that they would offer as services to the newspapers and that are owned by Gannett, and it was maybe too far ahead of its time because it didn't work out. But right as that was folding up, USAtoday.com was starting up, and so that's where I kind of moved from broadcasting into online and working there right around the time as the baseball strike and everything was making baseball not the preeminent sport in America and population or the popularity was going down. There weren't that many people in the online department that were really excited about baseball. And so I was like, hey, you know, I like baseball. I'll do some baseball. So I ended up being the online baseball editor there. And then after a while, John Hunt left Sports Weekly, where he was writing his column at USA Today. And they said, oh, well, we need somebody. You know about baseball, right? Why don't you write the column? And well, yeah, I play in a couple of fantasy leagues, but nevertheless, I was able to somehow make it work, and that's kind of how I got channeled into this baseball career.
See, I'm telling you, Forrest Gump, right place at the right time, you know?
Well, I think that's all I can think of was, like, you've done your 10,000 hours, and then you're at the door. When they knocked on the door, you were ready to go. That's the
right.
Key.
It's that's the way it is, you know? You're sitting on the bench there. You're the 25th man, and they say, hey, come pinch hit. So I guess if you can get up there and deliver a single or an extra base hit or get a walk.
So
you know, we love walks.
Who's your Wally Pipp then, Steve?
And they keep putting you back in the lineup.
So, all right, so play-by-play guy, other than Vin Scully, because everybody says Vin Scully, who's your favorite play-by-play guy? Like, who's the guy that you wanted to emulate?
You know, growing up, I was a Baltimore Orioles fan, and so I listened to and watched Chuck Thompson on the radio and on TV. And then after that, John Miller came along, that just took things to a whole nother level for me. I think John Miller is fascinating storyteller. He's great at the pace of the game, and his calls are so good. I can remember one time driving home the night of actually the playoff game against the Yankees with Tony Tarasco and the Derek Jeter home run, and I was listening to that game on the radio, and just the way the play unfolded, John Miller called it so perfectly that I didn't even have to look at the highlights, and I didn't want to as an Orioles fan anyway, but I didn't even have to because I saw that play in my mind because he described it so well. And I think that's what's really what's wonderful about the great play-by-play announcers like John Miller, like Vin Scully. They just paint that picture, and it's so good. And I would love to have those were the guys that I would emulate when I was sitting there, you know, playing my Stratomatic games as a kid and announcing them as they were in progress.
You announced your own games? You're just like sitting there in your bedroom, like at your desk playing the game, and you're announcing them too?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
And I'm not even going to tell you that I turned on my little cassette recorder and recorded me announcing them.
But
awesome. I won't tell you that.
You should know, Steve, and I'm going to confuse one of the two. I've spoken with both Steiner and Miller, and one of those guys has said the exact same thing about them. I believe it was Miller who would sit and call his own Stratomatic games, and his brother's friends would come over, and he would just mortify his brother because that's what he was doing. I'm pretty sure it was your hero there. You both started with the same passion.
That's awesome.
I think so. And, we used to actually, my brother and I used to get a little card table in front of the TV sometimes and turn the sound down on the Orioles game and do our own little broadcast
there you go.
For a while.
That's
well,
fantastic.
It's funny because some of the announcers today make you want to turn the volume down. I won't name names.
No, without a question, the addition of home and away broadcast, MLB.com at bat, was the game changer for that app.
Yeah, you're really good at the shameless plugs, by the way.
It's a true story, though. I don't have a problem with it.
It is true.
I've not talked to one baseball fan who has it who doesn't say they're grateful for the opportunity to leave Baltimore and get the Baltimore home calls or whatever.
But the nice thing about it, too, is like if I'm watching a game as a fantasy player.
Sorry, Steve, we'll be with you in a second.
No. And Steve, I'm sure, can speak to this as a radio guy and a fantasy guy that, like, if I have a pitcher going, I want to hear the play-by-play guy of his team, whether they're home or away, because
right.
they know more about that pitcher, and I might learn a little insight about that player. I mean, as a stat-oriented person, I'm looking at numbers, but I want to hear about what's a guy doing well, what's he struggling with, what's changed about his game, and try and learn some of that stuff.
Exactly right. John Miller, again, just was fantastic how he would call. Remember Greg Olson, the Orioles reliever?
Oh, yeah. Great curveball.
Had that curveball.
Yeah.
And I would just love to listen to the games on the radio where Miller would say, curveball, and, you know, strike three.
Yeah.
The way that he would just say that, you could just picture that nice big bender and the batter sitting there in the batter's box just all confused and taking it for the third strike.
It is without doubt one of the finest art forms that's evolved alongside the national pastime as fantasy baseball has evolved. And now, Steve, we will now test your fantasy baseball medal. We will put your opinions out there for others to use against you in your leagues. Are you prepared?
Fire away, guys.
All right, we're going to look at two start pitchers next week. We'll get your opinion on whether we should start them, bench them, or hope for the best. We will begin with Eric Stoltz. He's at Colorado and at home versus the Mets. What do you say, Steve?
Well, at Colorado is never an easy start for anybody. With Stoltz, he's got a very low walk rate, which I think inflates the numbers that you look at for strikeout to walk ratios. I don't know that I would buy him for two starts against the Rockies and the Mets, even though, you know, the best player on the Rockies, Carlos Gonzalez, the best player on the Mets, David Wright, not in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I agree everything with Steve said, and that's what makes me want to go for it. I'm not a big strikeout guy, but he doesn't walk anybody. He doesn't give up homers. Over his last 19 starts since May 2nd, when he's been on this great run, only 6 homers allowed in 124 and change innings. So the Mets are such an easy matchup right now, and the Rockies missing Carlos Gonzalez. I'd probably go for it.
All right, so there's splits. You have to decide who you believe in more. Fans, Josh Johnson, Steve, versus Oakland at home and then on the road at Tampa Bay.
Not touching Josh Johnson. He has just my AL labor team. I drafted both Johnson and R.A. Dickey, thinking the Blue Jays hype that was coming up in the preseason was for real.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one have delivered. And Johnson, I think Johnson has probably been one of the worst from a fantasy dollar standpoint one of the worst pitchers in the majors. And even though I think he had a decent outing last time, there's no way I'm touching him the rest of this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a case where the strikeout to walk numbers don't tell the full story. He's averaging better than a strikeout per inning, but 15 homers allowed and 81 and a third. I don't know if it's mechanics or whatever. I mean, his stuff appears to be fine, but there's something just not right there. And that home run rate is so scary. These are two good offenses. Got to pass.
Universally avoid Josh Johnson. Hector Santiago is at home versus the Tigers, then on the road at Minnesota.
White Sox have been so bad this year. I guess unless they're playing the Yankees, they're pretty good. But with Santiago, that's the problem. You're not going to get wins with him. He's got a pretty bad walk rate, so the WHIP is going to be elevated. In two starts, you multiply that by two. The only thing, if he's somebody that you're looking for strikeouts and that's your most important thing, then you can go with him. But otherwise, he's going to hurt you in the other four categories.
Yeah, this is a category-based decision. You know, Detroit's a tough matchup. Minnesota's a favorable matchup, although they got Josh Willingham back. 3.34 ERA in 16 starts, nearly 10 strikeouts per nine. Those are great numbers. But the walk rate, the tough offense, you're gonna look at this one and say, all right, what do I need? What risk can I afford to take? If you're slotted in somewhat in your ratios and you can afford to risk one to get maybe 15 or 16 strikeouts, you go for it. But it's a category-based decision this time.
All right, and high risk, both agree on that. Young Danny Salazar is on the road twice at Minnesota and at Oakland. Steve, what do you say?
Definitely very interesting. I'm intrigued by Danny Salazar. Number one, both of the starts, two pitchers' parks, so that's a plus. Cleveland is playing really well, unless they're playing Detroit. And in his last start, here, this will show you kind of an example of what Danny Salazar brings to the table. He struck out Miguel Cabrera three times in that last start against the Tigers. Of course, the other time he gave up a two-run home run, which kind of blew the game open. But I think that's the kind of risk-reward that you face with him. He was really, really good. Didn't allow an earned run in his first start. I think I'm rolling the dice with him, especially in those two pitchers' parks.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I mean, Oakland is a tough offense. That's a tough matchup. But they will strike out a lot, and he is a strikeout pitcher. I think the upside here is so great that you're willing to take the risk. There's a little bit of an unknown with him, but I think you got to go for it.
All right, that's one looks like it was worth the risk. Randall Delgado's at home versus the Orioles and on the road at the Pirates.
Home against the Orioles, that may be a difficult matchup. But the one thing, if you go to Pittsburgh, a very good pitcher's park. And, in fact, it's allowed the fewest home runs of any in terms of the home run factor. So here with Delgado, I think it's definitely an on the fence. He's pitched fairly well from a record standpoint. He's won four of his last five decisions, pitching at a decent ERA. I think with two starts, this is one of those where you may not want him in each individual start if that was the only start he was getting, but getting two, I think I'd go with him.
Yeah, it's a tough call. You know, he had a great run. His first eight starts after joining the rotation, a 2.61 ERA. But in that stretch, he had Miami, the Mets, San Francisco, San Diego. His last two times out, Boston and Tampa Bay, tough AL offenses, gave up four runs each time. And Steve's right. Baltimore is a good offense. Pittsburgh, since the All-Star break, based strictly by OPS, has been better than Baltimore. Ninth in baseball in OPS since the All-Star break. So this is one that is a little bit riskier than it looks based on the superficial numbers. So I'd be more inclined to look at it from a category standpoint. Delgado's not a big strikeout guy, so you're going for this one if you need the wins. That is the play here. So I would let that make the decision for me.
All right, there we go. And finally, Mr. Mejia is at the Dodgers and at San Diego. Steve, what do you say for our last two-star pitcher?
Well, he's been certainly effective in his three starts that he's had with the Mets. You got to go with the hot hand. The one thing that concerns me, though, is he's pitching with a bone spur in his elbow, and I think they're going to wait until after the season to really get that looked at. That means to me he could blow up at any time, and I might be a little skittish in that regard. But so far, you look at the numbers, the ERA under 2, the WHIP right around 1, good strikeout rate. I think you might as well go ahead and roll with him while he's hot.
Yeah, again, it's, you know, one great start or one favorable start in San Diego that makes you sort of, you know, weigh how much risk you're willing to take against the Dodgers. The thing I like about Mejia, not just the strikeout per inning, he's really refined his pitches. His slider and curveball are both very refined compared to where they were the last time we saw him. It reminds me a lot of Matt Harvey's development, and I don't want to make a comp –
right.
between them in terms of performance.
Which is process.
But one of the things that I think has enabled Harvey to take the big step forward this year is that last year his breaking ball, really neither of them had great definition. This year they've become very distinct pitches, and I think we're seeing that in a small sample size from Mejia, that both of his breaking balls now are becoming distinct, important pitches on their own, and I think that gives him a better chance of long-term success. So, like Steve said, I'd go for it. There's some risk here, but I'd go for it.
All right.
And, Corey, one other thing, too, the walk rate. He's only had 3 walks to 18 strikeouts in his 18 and a third innings. That's really impressive because he's had a little bit of trouble during his minor league career with the walk. So that's a very good sign.
All right, very good signs. And consensus on Mejia on the Southern California jaunt of his trip. Before we say goodbye to Steve and the podcast, we have some listener questions, so let's get to those via Twitter at MikeDellDQ. A fascinating, fancy question. Steve, drop Rendon for A-Rod in a non-keeper league.
Very interesting. Non-keeper league, so you're just talking about the balance of the season. I'm going to assume, here's the one little caveat. If A-Rod doesn't have that hearing, you know, I'm going to assume that he plays the rest of the season and they drag out his appeal so that he does get to play the entire rest of the season. If those are your choices right there, I think I would go with A-Rod. Our own Bob Nightingale at USA Today had a story the other day about how a couple of scouts had seen him, you know, up with the Yankees and in batting practice and during the games. Said his bat looked really good. It looks quicker than they remembered from last year, and the scouts universally were impressed. So, you know, we know what A-Rod is capable of doing. And so in that case, playing in the American League with, you know, you turn the lineup over a little bit more often than Washington, which is fairly struggling on offense these days, I would go with Alex Rodriguez as long as I had the idea that he was going to play the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree totally. And the other thing is, you know, Rendon, I think, is one of those guys who right now looks like a better, quote-unquote, real baseball player than fantasy player. Mm-hmm. A lot of his offensive value comes from his on-base skills rather than his power. So he's a nice player, and it's nice that he's also eligible at second base in some leagues. But assuming he plays the next 50 games, I think A-Rod has the capability to give you a lot more in the fantasy categories that matter.
All right, there you have it. And G-Saint18 has another question that's related to those who will not be playing for the rest of the season. I need a replacement for Nelson Cruz. Do I go with Steve? Do I go with Shuck, Jay, Carp, Rajai, Stubbs, or Reddick?
Well, obviously from that list, you're not going to get what you got with Nelson Cruz. Mm-hmm. And the power is really what is Nelson Cruz's main fantasy value, the runs driven in and the home runs. If you're looking to replace those, the guy with the best talent to do that would be Josh Reddick. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's 0 for August right now and is slumping badly. I would cross him off the list. The guy that I would look at is John Jay, and here's why. He's getting regular playing time. He's generally hitting high up in the St. Louis lineup, which is a very good offensive lineup. You're not going to get the power numbers, but then again, you look at the other guys, J.B. Shuck, no power. Rajai Davis, no power. Drew Stubbs, a little bit of power, but horrible batting average. You know, you're not going to get the whole package there. If you want steals, Rajai Davis is getting playing time as well, and will definitely get some steals for you there. But for the all-around average, runs scored, things like that, I look for the guy that's going to get the most playing time in the best offense, and to me, that's John Jay.
Yeah, I like Jay a lot. I would probably go for Rajai just, I think, because he's a potentially impact stolen base guy. You're not going to replace the power, as Steve said. You might as well take the guy who can give you the best bang for the buck, so to speak. You know, Rajai Davis, Leonis Martin, what he's been doing lately, these are guys that can move the needle very quickly in one category, almost on their own. Rajai Davis, 6 steals in a week. In some deep leagues, that's what you get all week from your whole team.
Right.
And he did that in 2 games. So I do like Jay's all-around game, but I think Rajai has a better chance to give you a quick impact. So that's probably the way I'd go unless I was already leading the league in steals.
Well, that's look at it that way. So if steals will move you 3-4 slots by just a handful of steals, then Rajai help you out. John Jay will hold water in a lot of the other categories, which is a great strategy as well. If that's what you need right now. What we need right now, Steve Gardner, this is one of my favorite times of the day. It's as we wrap it up, we like to do shameless plugs. Where and how might we find all the magic that is Steve Gardner?
Well, you can certainly look in Sports Weekly, USA Today Sports Weekly. I have a fantasy baseball column in there every single week. And so you can check that out both on newsstands and online at usatoday.com. We have a fantasy baseball homepage there, fantasybaseball.usatoday.com. And you can always find me at Twitter at Steve A. Gardner.
All right, that's pretty. That's the full list, right? Twitter and the sites. All right, we're good to go. And
there you go.
Has your season been successful in fantasy baseball, sir?
It's been okay. My teams in AL and NL labor are laboring, pardon the pun there. Outwars, teams in the middle of the pack, I still think I have a little bit of upside, just need a little push from Jeff Samardzija after that last start. Ugh. My Fantasy Sports Trade Association team is hanging in there after winning the league last year. Looks like we're probably not going to repeat, but still the top of the division kind of finished, so I'm happy with that.
All right, Steve, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Thanks, Steve. Great
talking
to you.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Enjoy your weekend. Have a great day. Corey Schwartz, any thoughts as we head off into the weekend?
I just need my NFBC pitching to give me 6 weeks of good production, and I can take this thing down. That's all I'm focused on right now.
All right, people, if you're listening to this, put that out there for Corey Schwartz in the universe. Then your podcast listening will be worth something.
I have Randall Delgado, and I'm literally sitting here with this decision of trying to start him next week or not. So, like, that's why I made sure we got the discussion with Steve today to hear what he had to say.
So just so you know, folks, we are all invested in what we do here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, as always, for letting us invade your brain with some fantasy knowledge. If this is Friday, then enjoy your weekend. And if it's past Friday, enjoy whatever day it is for you. For Corey Schwartz, I'm JB. Have a great day.